turn on. Go on there now. I didn't see that.
With your Mayo Clinic.
You got any music in here? In the CD? Hi, good morning. How are you? Oh, okay. Hawaiian music.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show here. Lovely day. We got some rain coming off the mountains, but always makes it green and more beautiful next week and next year and what have you, but beautiful today. Thank you for listening, and you can go to carolcox.com and pick up all of our shows at podcasts, carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. And you can go to podcasts, or you could go to KWAI1080AM.com and listen live stream at KWAI1080AM.com. And for some of you that are interested in following what we do, you can. We also have a show now on ThinkTech at on Tuesdays, ThinkTech Hawaii at 12 o'clock live stream, and it's on demand if you like to. And we, as well as we have Olelo show on Channel 54 1 o'clock, and on Thursdays Channel 54 at 7 o'clock p.m. and 1 o'clock p.m. So if you want to call in and pitch in and on some of the different topics that we're going to be tossing around and engage in, you're welcome to 524-1080. One big hot burning question is that we're going to be talking about this union stuff because it's a bit, but I'm going to approach it in a different way that would normally do it. And I asked this one question, and if you all could join in and offer something, some insight. But the question is it okay, or is it problematic, or does it present any problems in union environment where a union represents the management of an entity, let's say the Board of Water Supply, and then it also represents the working force in the Board of Water Supply, the lower-ranking people. So, and both entities are paying dues for this union to represent. If that's the case, then how does one serve the lower-ranking people, that are the non-management people, who comes in and complains and seek relief from the union against the impacts that the management is projecting on them? I'd like to hear from you. And is it possible, or is there something wrong with this, or is there, and what kind of relief would the workers receive or should receive that are exposed to this kind of practice? If you ask me, I would say I think it would be like the doldrums of justice. There will be no justice. There will be hand washing and people turning the other cheek or looking the other way. And so what does that relate, and what does that end up being? It translates into hostile work environments, because how then can the union protect the lower-ranking person who complains to the union seeking relief, seeking grievance, and this, and then are they discouraged from talking or pursuing a grievance? Or does the union workers or union leaders take up on that and give close attention to that relationship? So then, if that's the case, some say, I've talked to a few people, and they say, well, that's union busting. Well, no, it's not. It seemed to be solidification of the union and their stance, and what we have come to see, this hybridization of a protector who has a sword and the shield and won't thrust the sword and won't put up the shield to block it. So is that right? Is that what unions have become? That's a big question. And then what translates even further in a negative sense, in my opinion, in observation, is that it translates and finds its way into the performance in the field of the lower-ranking people. Or it creates a hostile environment, because now if the union follows through, it gets the complaint, it files the grievance, then they're going to represent the management, who is being alleged that they committed certain acts that was improper or against the federal work rules, or, you know, the various rules that protect workers. So it's a kind of a sticky subject. And who benefits? It seems that, and I've looked at, whether it's HGEA and there are others, I've looked at this now, and based on many of the lower-ranking people that call up and seek assistance, because they've maybe on many occasions sought to get relief by filing grievance, and their agents won't call them back, they're informing me. So where does this lead? Well, we end up with people that are disgruntled or fearful or scared, or if they were to report certain things, the CC&B's issues with that, the software at the water department, and all of those things at the meter. And I know the standard position is, for many of you listening out there, is that, well, it's not my problem. Well, you know, no, it's not. I agree with you. Because unless you know, unless you walk to the post office or the mailbox and got a letter that says you've been screwed again through an estimation of your water bill, you could take the position that it's not affecting you. But one day, these things manifest themselves into potentially a $1,000 water bill when you normally pay $110 a month, or period. And God only knows how much you're losing, how much money you're losing in the sewer charges. And so it just goes on and on and on. And now, does the union then communicate if they were to go to the management and say, worker X has filed a complaint? Is the union going to make a declaration and say that because of this circumstance, we're going to hire an independent investigator? And independent. But who renders the decision after the fact? Is it Mayor Caldwell? Is it the director of the Board of Water Supply in this case? Well, we've seen what happens, and we know that this lends itself, and I can't say to you that this is the actual thing, but in past situations, it suggests that it's union busting, but the union is quite comfortable with it. So is it union busting? And then what about those funds that the lower-ranking people and management pay in this potentially conflicted situation or this relationship? Kind of, it's a really strange one, folks, and so it perpetuates itself and manifests itself into, given this is a Democratic stronghold, as we call it, and I tend to say it's really not a stronghold. We're just not, people are not thinking on their feet these days. They're leaving their success to chance. They're leaving their future to chance, because any person, man, woman, or child that is in working, engaged, know they're paying dues or taxes and what have you, and it's quite common to ask, what am I getting for this? There are some major issues here, and I think I feel pretty good about talking about this and have some right to talk about it, because I've been active in exposing, bringing to you the major issues with the CC&Bs and the sidewalk walkers and the meter readers and all of that, and showing that there were gross neglect on part of the Board of Water Supply management in some instances, and overcharging and estimates, and knowing that the systems that were purchased and to wear it up with one system that was already in position or in place didn't suit up well with that, and so they didn't disclose that to us, and it just goes on and on and on. Okay. This union issue, how much with this dysfunctionality or this situation that exists as described, and mind you, I'm also privy to a letter that was written to Mr. Randy Pereira regarding this subject matter at Board of Water Supply. But I'm speaking in general to many of the other people that have come to me. And you would think there'd be more aggressive effort on the part of the people. Is there a caller? Well, we'll discontinue receiving calls if you're not answering, and there's maybe a problem, so you'll have to catch me on the next rebound. So what happened then is that we have a situation here with, at the union part, who benefits from this relationship? Is it this, I mentioned the stronghold, the Democratic stronghold. Is this relationship of such that there's a wedding between the mayor and the governor and the legislators who find great benefit in leaving this state of this situation as it is? I don't know, but just step back and take a look at our system as we have it here. And I think if you were an earlier listener and have heard some of the shows, some say, well, you know, you're an environmental activist, and so you're focusing on environmental. No, because every aspect of that is not environmental is relative to what I talk about the environmentalists. Issues. You take, for example, a site that is contaminated. I mentioned to you the other day over at Evil A, 616 Evil A Road, and in there, how does this relate to union workers? Well, if you have a union workers working in this facility that has benzene, and I'm going to share with you some of the more awful chemicals that they would be exposed to, like toluene, ethyl benzene, xylenes, and number 6 fuel oil, naphthalene, benzopyrenes, hydrogen sulfide. And so you're submitting these people to this environment, this workplace, and you have this cozy relationship with management and the lower-ranking people. And they're exposed to these chemicals or not prepared, not being given the proper garb to wear to the respirators or the levels are so high and they shouldn't be working in them and what have you. And if that's the case, what happens? You see? And there you go. So the union stands back, and I can tell you in some instances I've seen city workers and they have a pretty good representation in the union, but more times than any I have gotten calls where people calling me now to say that I've tried to file a grievance, my agents won't call me back, and blah 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 blah, you know. And then you call the agent and they talk to you as if you're calling the kingdom of something. You would have to hear it firsthand. It's like, well, gee, that's funny. When we want to put the rail in and you were campaigning for that, you were doing that and worried about the people and going out there protesting and putting your people out there. And so you did it because you the love of the community and the strength of the community and creating jobs, but the quality of the workplace atmosphere and environment seemed to escape them. So I do have to share with you that when I was interviewing people about this, this is what's quite interesting, and the last thing that anybody want to do to me is to thread me or suggest that I should be careful for speaking the truth, and so therefore I will err on the side of being silent and forget the truth, you know, because no, if there's an injustice or the resemblance of an injustice, I think that everybody owe it to themselves, to their families, to speak out and speak up, because, you know, nobody's permanent here anyway. Just keep that in mind. But the scars and the stench of corruption will always linger in the air, will always be there in your minds if we allow it to take over. So, yeah, you know, the issue and the I won't call it the warning or such, but you don't know the unions, man. They got big guys that come and knock on your door and bomb your house and do this and go, really? You mean that they'll bomb it again? You know, they'll kill you. You mean they'll hit me on the side of the head again? Okay, I'll just make sure I turn the other cheek this time, you know. But many of you out there listening to this, you probably think the solution to this is and big government and big regulations. But I got news for you. The way things are structured here, it would be like taking a big piece of chunk of meat from the hungriest tiger you've ever seen. They got things, the Democratic Party has things so sewn up that now they're starting to eat themselves. That's how bad it is. Because we don't have any representation, and I'm not offering that to on the other side of the aisle to say that we want to apply the affirmative action in politics and that, well, because we don't have that many Republicans, therefore we should, in a situation such as this, you know, make sure we have a certain percentage by law, the affirmative action effort. No. And I'm saying that's just one concern. So what happens is, what does this lend itself to? Is it money? What happens with these fundings, the dues? If you're not getting the service for your dues, and if you're not, as these guys are alleging, and you're calling in and you're saying, I need some help, and then they send an agent, and then the agent comes and contacts them, but then never, as they're describing it, they rarely hear back. So what happens to this money? Does it end up in the slush fund for the mayor or the legislators, or when they need to rent a room, or over there on right across from the police department in Baratania, where the Democrats congregate and have their gin and rum and Jell-O cookies and all of that, and, you know, the big party house, frat house, I call it. System, and we're going to have to work around it. But going back to the union issue and all of that, what really is to be said about this is that the workers are not getting the representation according to them. And so management can run astray in some of these instances. They could do this, whatever it is they wish to do, and knowing that they are protected or not provided any scrutiny or will receive any scrutiny. And I can't say this is all factual as to what is transpiring, but having worked and familiar with unions, sometimes they can be a little quirky. But this is at a level where people are saying, we are harmed. We are not getting representation. We are not receiving fair treatment. We are not free of a hostile workplace. So all of that comes into play here. So what do you do with it, you know? And again, it means a lot to the worker. And so we'll talk about that later on or in the near future. What we have here is a broken system, a system that we have the rail, as you saw that former Governor Cayetano wrote a letter in Washington Post pounded. But what are we going to do locally here? We know it's an extreme amount of money, a high cost. We know that many of the unions support it and still support it because, rightfully so, they're supposed to manage and look for the good of the worker and encourage wherever they can jobs and quality jobs. And, you know, that's par for the course. But I believe that when you're in partnership with you're representing two bodies in one house, and how do you separate that? And I mentioned earlier about independence or independently investigating. How do you manage that? Should there be, in those situations, should the union be required not to represent both parties, that there be a policy, a rule? And there may be, I don't know, I'm not familiar with it, but if there is, then someone's failing to enforce it. If it's not, then shame on, and if there is a rule, there's a problem. So it's back and forth, and I think about, I'm trying to be careful because I have some of the names. There's several situations with regarding this subject on unions, whether it be the DLNR, the DoCare officers, whether it be the city workers. They seem to have a common thread, even though they're different situation is different unions representing them. They're all saying the same thing when they come to me, that they're not getting the fair treatment and the treatment that they expect to be as union members, that they're being protected and guarded against. All they know is that their money is being taken, they say. And when it comes time for representation, they're not being afforded that. And they're then, many of them say that, well, I started off with a simple grievance, but the retaliation increased and intensified to such a high level that then, while having to have survived the original issues and concerns that caused me to file the grievance, it's compounded now because nothing is being done, and they suspect the dual relationship with the union and management and low rank, that they then become a target of greater unfair labor practices being inflicted on them. Now, this is what's communicated to me. I'm not part of that union. I'm not a recipient of their services, but sharing with you what is being conveyed to me by these workers. So, if that being the case, how do we get around that? Where are the legislators involved? I mean, they see it happen. They know something. Many people also, they will indicate that they have contacted their union agent. They've contacted their city, sometimes city council person. They've contacted state legislators in their area. And they all get the same treatment. This is what they're telling me now. So how is it that these things can have this common thread that they are members of a union being protected by a union, and that union protects management and them, and they're not getting any response or a sort of a watered-down response, as some say? Where do they start? So why is it that in a town like this, in a state like this, Democratic tend to talk about unions and union support? How is it that such a climate can develop, or an environment can develop under their watchful eyes? How is it that that could happen? So it's kind of scary in a sense that it's going nowhere. And the big question is, who benefits from this? You know, I do know in one instance about a couple of years back, I was looking at a person that was giving money and talking that they rent the building, and then the legislators would come and party and do their thing or have meetings, but it would be not intended for that purpose, a stated purpose, but they fund the purchase of the building or the rental or leasing of it or whatever was necessary, long term, short term. So that is the kind of things that we're getting that's coming through here. The this letter that I have real quick, and we're going to go to a break with the management of HGA let my coworkers down, and as 35 years of civil rights down, they have walked away, and even you seem to have a peculiar idea. This is a letter to Mr. Randy Pereira. Peculiar idea that what you will and will not enforce or advocate for on behalf of those that pay their dues based upon the promise. A hostile work environment is a workplace condition that must be made compliant jointly by HGEF, GEA, and BWS. Fair and exactly equal treatment for all members within the same workplace duty classification is mandatory. So says the law. Failure to do so put federal money at risk throughout the city and county of Honolulu in the state of Hawaii. That's part of this letter, and it's responding to, apparently, as I get it, that Randy Pereira received an original letter, and he sent a lady named, this letter's to Nomura. So, therefore, she's representing Randy, and this party is writing back to her after attending that meeting that going on to say, retaliation is a method by which management uses to scare, separate, and weaken the solidarity strength of union workers. They can succeed in this when our union management fails to show up for the fight or come up with flimsy excuses that we normally hear from our management as a justification for not advocating for workers' best interests. So these are equal treatment as others where they can show disparity, insistence on a mitigating solution for the steady and ongoing harassment of my coworkers. These are tidbits from this letter that is written. Also, this letter states that HGEA dropped the ball along with the mean and abusive behavior of BWS. So now you have to fix it by taking responsibility for your past indifferences to your dues-paying members. Motor Wallace Supply can pay for three tires that were damaged as a result of boil water supply uses. So this particular party is saying that while they're experiencing these problems, they're being harassed. They're being picked on. And the claim now is that the HGA is not representing them as they had anticipated or as they believe the law requires them to. So this is a real problem, folks. What happens, just based on this letter now, I don't know. I will say that I wrote Randy Pereira when the initial letter that I received, and I didn't get a response. I indicated to him that I would be talking about this and that I had been in receipt of a letter, now it's a second letter, and that I would enjoy the pleasure of talking to him and giving him an opportunity to speak to those points rather than sitting here just talking in general. But to date, he has not felt, apparently didn't feel that I was worthy of a response. So I don't have any explanation for that. But we'll be back in the next hour. Hopefully things will go a little bit better. But if not, then we do apologize for the inability to receive phone calls. There were a number of them. So hang in there and we'll work with it and get by. So this is the Carol Cox Show here at KWAI 1080 AM. On the radio, and you can go to KWAI1080AM.com and give us a call or send me a text or send me an email if you have a question in the next show. Send an email to Carol at CarolCox.com. There's always that we are able to communicate and we can speak to that. So Carol at CarolCox.com, C-A-R-R-O-L-L at C-A-R-R-O-L-L-C-O-X.com. All right, and we'll be back in the next couple of minutes. We're over in Hawaii Kai. You might find this interesting. There was a lady, a 70-year-old lady, went to the doctor. And for therapy there in Hawaii Kai. And for some reason, she was left in the building. They locked down the clinic. They locked down the clinic on the lady, and she was one of the last patients of the day. And she got a service, and she said that she went to the restroom, and the staff failed to check to see if anybody was in there or clear the building or whatever you would think would do. She was in the restroom, and all of the staff, she says, left her locked up in the building. So she ended up calling 911 for 911, and the fire department arrived, and they had to extract her by somehow jimmying the door to let her in. Because she was able, fortunately, she had her cell phone and was able to call in, but she's confined to a wheelchair. And so can you imagine that kind of care? So is it something that we can accept or excuse? I don't know, but I would hate, like the Dickens, to be there myself, being caught in that predicament and sitting there being left in a room. What if she had a major medical problem? That would really be problematic. So it's kind of strange that she was a bit upset about it, but then took it lightheartedly afterwards. But
caller, you there?
We still have that problem, so we'll pass on the phone calls. I do apologize, and we'll try next week. But anyway, what I wanted to share with you also is that I
I look at Evil Lake, and we talk about this building that that's over there with the contaminants on it on the ground, and we see that the city government and everyone is now talking about the homeless are too many there, and they've immediately put street signs and posting signs saying street clothes and would be clean and what have you. But on the very ground that they are situated on, they are, it's contamination. And how is it that you could have a million or so pounds of tar-like substance, bunker oil, dumped in the ground, and it just stays there, and the responsible party gets to sell the land to another company, and that company promises to clean it up, and so nothing is cleaned up because they have it's difficult, not as they thought it could, how, as easy as it could have been cleaned up. But it's funny. With all the contaminants, you don't see anyone complaining about in the state government or the city government or the federal government coming down hard on these people that have polluted, and this Gasco and BHP. So the site-specific health safety plan, I just want to read, at the former Gasco site remediation and redevelopment at 616 Evelay Road. Now, hazard identifications, chemical hazards. Table 2, this is just taken from the documents at the State Health Department. Table 2-1 contains general information for each of the primary chemical hazards anticipated. Further information for each chemical hazard is located in proper material safety data sheet. So this is what they have there. And let's see here. This, it's scary when you think they can have explosions. And they've had explosions in that area, and yet no real excitement or what have you. They're managing it quietly. I believe that based on the contaminants in that area and the way the impacts on the environment, that the state and federal government should immediately make them clean it up, whatever the expense, whatever it is. But so they say, it, and this is one of these documents here, toxic chemicals can enter the body through injection, ingestion, eye and skin absorption, and inhalation. These hazards can be avoided by following proper safety procedures and using the appropriate equipment or and PPE. Injection or skin punctures with sharp and pointed objects presents a hazardous route to exposure. Okay, this is the gobbledygook that they put in these documents, and it tells you what you need to watch out for and some of the threats. But why is it that the state health department does not take an action and say, you injected this material as part of your earlier practice years gone back, you sell it, and then you sell it to a party that say, oh, we can clean it up, and then we're going to clean it up, and then we're going to make our money back in the sale of the land or the lease of the land for retail and what have you, manufacturers or industrial, whatever it is. And they haven't cleaned anything per se, all of it, because it's so difficult. So they come along and they inject different chemicals, peroxide and all of that into the ground or into the system that they have, an array of pipes and what have you, but it doesn't clean it up. I'm informed by the state that these methods that have been tried earlier did not work. So benzene is one of those, and I offer this, and sounds like I'm not speaking and knowing exactly what it is that I want to say, but I do. I'm saying exactly what I want to say, and that is just listen to the chemicals, and you don't see any urgency in the actions of the state health department. or the EPA. So benzene is there. Soil and groundwater on this site contains benzene, which is the principal risk driver for this site. Appropriate engineering controls have been put in place to ensure that personnel, the public, and the environment are not harmed. Really? And a vapor barrier is buried approximately 6 inches under grade, and assuming the barrier is not penetrated or the soil disturbed, the level of benzene in the ambient air is negligible. See, it didn't say it's not there and it's not a harm or threat. It just says that if it's not detected, and it's negligible if it's there, if this membrane or whatever it is they put in place to contain it works. But it's just still there, and they're trying to manage it and figure out. But this goes back in the 80s and further back than that. Actually, the plant was to generate these chemicals, and from extracting them from tar, certain process or whatever it was, we don't know exactly. But benzene is a volatile organic compound found in petroleum products. It is highly flammable liquid that floats on but is also semi-soluble in water. Benzene is a confirmed human carcinogen, A1, and appropriate PPE shall be donned when necessary. Benzene vapors are denser than air. When concentration levels are likely to exceed action levels, a half-mass respirator will be donned. So remember now, they had explosion there in September 2010, around that time. And they weren't really clear as to what had happened. They said, oh, some gases or something in some of the reports. And later reports, they may have gotten into greater details. But benzopyrene is another one that's present there. It's a polyaromatic hydrocarbon that is mutagenic and highly carcinogenic. Now, this is a four-acre area, people. This is between Lowe's, Home Depot, Costco, and one portion on another section of the one boundary. Then the theaters, Dole Theaters. And yet, all that the mayor and everyone else get upset about is that the homeless that have started to collect there. It's unsightly. But it's not what you see that is problematic. It's what you're not seeing that they should be. This area should be condemned, and every action, every act that could be taken to compel Gasco, BHP, and Weston to clean this land up immediately. No more studying and monitoring and trying to test to see what happened, because ultimately it's going to be left in place. The way I'm reading these documents suggests that it'll be left in place, and they will allow them to use it as light industrial or trucking or shipping, and where you would build buildings with high ceilings so that the gases wouldn't be a greater threat or great threat to people, the workers there. And it would somewhat ventilate. But it's still being left in the soil. It is one of the many compounds found in coal, tar pitch volatiles, and is a yellow crystalline compound created by incomplete combustion at temperatures between 300 and 600 degrees Celsius. It can be found in smoke and exhaust fumes, especially those of diesel. Routes of entry include inhalation, ingestion, and absorption through the skin. Another chemical there is naphthalene. Now, this site is at 616 Evilay Road in Evilay, previously owned by Gasco and BHP, and now it's owned by Weston, who bought it with the conditions that they would clean it up. But ultimately, it rests back into Gasco's responsibility. They are the responsible party for generating this waste. But naphthalene is also known as a white tar. It is a pH that is volatile, causes damages to red blood cells, and accumulates the various in various organs. It can be found in mothballs and fuels. It is a white, flammable solid and is known to cause hemolytic anemia in humans. Now, that rings a bell if you may think back. Remember I told you at Red Hill some of the documents that I had found while the Navy was in the state was proclaiming that there were no chemicals in the water, but the fuel itself and the naphthalene, like mothballs, you find it in that, was found in the water, traces of it in water at Red Hill. We reported that. We read on this show, like now, from those documents, and it's been a debate, is it or is it not? Leaking fuel oil. Well, where did the naphthalene come from? Well, anyway, there's another element there. Number six fuel oil, or bunker C. Number six fuel oil, also known as bunker C, is a dense, viscous oil produced by blending heavy residual oils with a lighter oil. It is most common of the bunker fuels and sometimes simply referred to as bunker fuel. Number six fuel oil can have varying density, and can therefore float, sink, or remain suspended when mixed with water. When spilled, number six fuel will spread into streaks or break up into discrete patches and tar balls. The main risk driver of number six fuel is that it may contain PAHs such as benzopyrenes and may cause off-gassing and hydrogen sulfide due to possible sulfur content. All of this now is potentially a problem. They're laying in that 4-acre area underground, and yet you haven't heard Kirk Caldwell speak a peek of this, hadn't breathed a word of it, but now all of a sudden there's too many homeless people in there. I mean, something's screwball about this. And then the physical hazards of concern are those hazards of commonly associating with slipping, tripping, heavy, okay. But they go on to talk about this, and it is absolutely frustrating to see this and to know that they were allowing this to just sit there, and it's still there. If you go back of as if you're going to the theaters, and right when you come off of Nimitz, turn right there at City Mill, and you turn right, drive in the back, and you'll see this open field with look like a spider's web of pipes and hoses and containers and totes and 55-gallon drums just sitting there. So they're trying to reduce the threat, because apparently they're not really cleaning it up. Now, they may be cleaning some of it up, but the bulk of it is still left in the ground. So that promise that we as an engineer firm, an environmental engineering firm, will be able to clean this thing up. Well, that is not true, that it has not happened. And I read one document earlier that the material was floating on the water, and it presented itself in a way that seemed to have had made its way to the surface. And so what about the runoff? And the stream there is not far, 1,600 feet, but where does the runoff occur? And then you have ditches and you have storm drain runoff. So it makes a big difference, you know. Here's a 2017 letter, March 22nd, 2017, from the state records. The facility site, BHP Gasco Benzene Site. The Department of Health has reviewed the semi-annual groundwater monitoring reports and has the following recommendation. In addition to its semi-annual groundwater monitoring performed at the site, large volumes of purge LVP sampling should be done at the site and the adjacent Dole cannery site to assess the soil vapor concentrations across both parcels to be used to confirm the soil vapor concentrations are currently being measured using traditional discrete soil vapor sampling, a PowerPoint presentation describing. But anyway, this letter was 2017. Now, they bought this land way back up, you know. This is 2017. I think it was bought in 2008, 2004, but nonetheless, with the promises that they would clean it up. And yet, it's still there. And they're taking bits and pieces of it as we talk right now. Just going through some of this. You know, try not to dismiss this, because what I'm getting at is that the tolerance and the willingness for people to cite all of this commercial activity, these, and you and I are going in and out of those places, the shop, and going to these areas, and we don't know what it is that we're potentially breathing. There's no signs to say, you know, for you people that are just warning us, underground is contaminations of great concern. Or put a placard telling what it is so you, the citizen, can be informed. But you go into Lowe's. I was there the other day looking to see, well, is there anything around here that openly tell me or the general public what is this site, what is going on, what are the threats, do I have to worry or anything? And this is one of the most contaminated sites in the state of Hawaii. And they call it the brownfield site. It's not a brownfield site. It's a VRP. Voluntary Responsible Party comes up with some measures similar to the brownfield, where you put cement or asphalt or some membrane or something over a contaminated site with restricted use. The danger is, what is the restricted use that the state is allowing? So in 2015 now, these are the kinds of things that troubles me, because the groundwater is influenced by the ocean's waters and the tidal movements and the percolation. And no one can say to me that if you have this tar-like substance below ground extending to, as the state said, about 20 to 40 feet deep, if that's the case, it's hitting groundwater. If that's, and then if you're finding water bubbling up or percolating up, or not percolating, but rising up, it's going to touch those contaminants and bring them to the surface. So, a letter on March 4th, 2015, the Hawaii Department of Health, they're making comments. We note that the contaminants of concern remain high, especially in the central portion of the site, with the highest benzene concentration, and for your at 410,000 milligrams per liter, significantly above the site-specific action level of 6,500 milligrams. So you see the difference? It's 400,000 milligrams higher than allowed, the environmental action level. We also note that the benzene concentrations, ESI-1, ESI-MW-12-A, on the Lowe's site, rebounded to 7,000 milligrams per liter. Remember, again, while the closest to the Lowe's store footprint was 1 milligram per liter, or less than 1 milligram. Based on these results, we agree with the recommendations for additional ISCO treatment. Weston should also consider on-site excavation of the recalcitrant areas in an effort to meet the remedial action objectives. Table 3 of the historical and analytical results for groundwater samples in future groundwater monitoring reports should include historical data for the groundwater wells on the Lowe's property, including the results of ESI sampling runs. So I'm making a lot out of nothing, probably, in some of your minds, but I'm trying to convey a message here that I'm brought to a point where you look at Jill Takuda. She's in the papers as being credited or recognized or whatever you call it, however you want to describe it, as saying no to Caldwell regarding the rail, wanting more to extend the GTE. But what about our environment? Who's standing up and speaking out and saying enough already? No more projects. We don't need any more projects. We need to clean up the mess that we have, because if we continue in this pursuit of happiness and building trains, planes, and fancy things, you got to understand something. These have consequences. You know, I'm brought back to this train, you know, the banana patch. Now, I don't know the exact goings on there, but apparently they've hit a snag in dealing with the banana patch. There are some contaminants, and there's a cost, and all of that. And that reminds me, I think they're just in the paper today, or they're saying they did an advertisement. The city did an advertisement saying half of the train is up. So basically, appealing to you, the weak-kneed taxpayer who's lost right now, don't know whether to shovel out all his money or go dig a hole and just hop in it, because they're not going to stop. They're going to drown you in taxes. So if this monument to failure is standing and they're sending out now an advertisement, they being the city or whoever's responsible for the rail, to suggest that it's half done, and so therefore we should be approved and we should get the money. Half done, I would say it's half baked, because we haven't begun to address how we're going to power the train itself up. What's the source of the power? Emergency concerns. How do we extract people? All of the land and the condemnation, it may be up, but still yet there could be many, many lawsuits. And I noticed that Dillingham, and where Dillingham goes to the freeway there in Kalihi, the First Hawaiian building, the GasPro building, you got all kinds of things there that, you know, dotting the island with contaminants and historical sites of concern with contaminants and other hazards. How do we address those? And so I look at that, and I'm going back now to talk about and inject this concerns for the union. When you look, is the people that work at Kiewit, are they union? I don't know. If you think you have some information you'd like to share with me, text me at carol@carolcox.com or email me. I'd like to know if there is such a thing. But so why you don't, you go to Kapalama, there is a former site, incinerator site owned by the city. Contamination, main constituent of concern is lead. Mayor Caldwell hadn't said a dang thing about it. 925, the new Kapalama City Hall, Satellite City Hall. Contaminants on the ground. Cities renting to buy. hadn't said a thing about that. How do we extract that? We need to address the water in the 42-inch main, water main, BWS, that run down Dillingham. Haven't touched that. Haven't come up with a conclusion as to what the cost is and what have you. And then, out of all of that, they're going to have problems. You've got issues of welding and all kinds of things. And how about driving piles and doing all of that? So when the mayor says, or in their advertisement, is that we got it half done, makes me want to scream and say, enough already. Let's take the Ben Kai Tunnel route. As much as some of you probably, well, you probably could end up holding your nose for 5 minutes or so, and if you're inclined to, and write a letter against your will to Donald Trump, the president. And we've jokingly said here on the show in the past that now that Trump is in, there are going to be a lot of nervous people because he's probably going to say no to the rail and funding it. Well, I'm sure glad that Cayetano acted out on that and pursued it. And as many people have been, I'm sure, I know several people that I've talked to think that that's an appropriate thing to do. And they've always, and I too personally, I would love to see the rail stopped. And not to double back and say, but we ought to use it for this. I think, as I've said way, way, way back, that it should be, a portion of it should be left so that mankind can stare from outer space and say, that's a monument to failure, that's a monument to corruption, and remind us, this is what corruption looked like as it manifests itself. Steel is rusting, but isn't it funny, they don't think that by using steel rail, and they don't think you're going to put the two together. The stadium, they say, is a risky business because it's made of steel and it could possibly be a problem because it's rusting, the stadium. But you don't hear anyone saying amongst the Caldwellites who are saying, well, you know, the steel is going to rust too on the railroad track or the train tracks. But they got it half done. So therefore, we should let them go all the way. That's a sign of illness. And then I would propose, this is a good time where we all rethink our positions in this place called Honolulu. And that is, every legislator that is supporting this and every legislator that is supporting giving Caldwell another nickel, we should vote them out. I don't care if they give Santa Claus candy on Christmas. We should vote them out. Enough is enough is enough. They're not respecting our needs, the cost, the driving up of fees and taxes and all of that, so that we could pay off this thing called a rail. Yet we won't address the removal of, and the need to remove, and the wise thing to do, because initially they start off with these contaminants when they are found to be in place. Oh, we're going to clean it up. That'd be the first conversation. Oh, we're going to take care of that. And then 5, 10, as in the situation at Evil A, this particular site, I think it goes about 13 years now that the promises of back and forth, they attempted to clean it up, that some of the documents just show. It may be further back than that because Gasco, BPH, stopped the operation but still left the material in place. So that speaks to how silly the rules are and the enforcement are, and how loose these guys can play. So Gasco knowingly and admittedly contaminated the site through its practices. I can't say to you that the state authorized them to inject or dump this material back into the ground. But wouldn't it say a lot that if the state say they didn't know when they should have known? Or Gasco did it without the knowledge of the state. So where are the fines? In this political climate, you got money, you got power. You got power, you dictate to who goes where and when and how. And then you use distractions to the people that you fund and appoint and put in place, like the Caldwells, like the legislators. And these may be not a political reason for the imbalance in the House, the state, with the legislators and Senate having more Democrats than Republicans. If I was a company and I had the occasion to find that I have committed, my actions have contributed to a major environmental concern or condition, I would take ownership of that. But if you don't need to take ownership and you can go around and you have weak-kneed politicians who will readily accept donations so that they can stay in, and some of them get maybe $500, $200 from donors and what have you, and $1,000 or $2,000 in some in-kind services. But what's left is that in this situation, Gasco leave, it's there, and they were allowed to, with the authorization of the state, to sell the land. And fortunately, the rules are such that it's from, they say, cradle to grave. So if you are a responsible party for generating this waste, then you're the responsible party for cleaning it up. So how is it that we could have this? And going back to, you know, what the Democrats say, they care about people, right? And they care about the environment, because, you know, the Republicans, as the if you talk to any Democratic leader, they'll be quick to fire off and tell you, even in the current debate, global warming, right? Yeah, well, global warming is, you know, the Democrats just don't get it. You hear people, comedians, they're just ragging on the Republicans. Global warming, you know. And I realize that it's a liberal versus conservative entities. But the reality is this is the earth. The Democrats had a march here yesterday, or the liberal people, I don't know, maybe there were some Republicans involved, the march of the Earth Day march. March for the Earth. Well, take your asses down to Evil A and then take an action there. Because if you got a 4-acre plot breathing off these gases that are potentially laden with chemicals and of such that they can kill you, sicken you, sicken the environment, and yet they say, oh, it's carbon. Yeah, you know, the liberals say, it's carbon, man, it's carbon. Carbon is, you know, and the Republicans don't get it, you see. Carbon don't get it. Man, you know, those Republicans, they're out there, and I'm thinking, wow, why don't we see a streak of honesty in the Democrats, the environmentalists, the ones that pointing the fingers and failing to recognize that they got four back looking at them. And I'm not taking issue with, you can do what the heck you want to do as liberals or Democrats, or, but if you, true to your word, you would tell Kirk Caldwell to pack his crap and get out of office, and you would take actions. And you would say, well, Kirk, let's look at this. You know, we're hounding the Republicans about their failure to accept the logical scientific explanation that carbon is being emitted in the air and it's depleting and it's impacting the ocean and acidifying the ocean and the waters and contaminating our waters and killing the flora and fauna, you know. And yet, not one of these liberal-minded people have said openly, say, enough is enough. Hey, Kirk, you know, each of those sewage spills that takes place under your watch because you were eager with your buddies and the ones that were sticking money in your pocket or whatever your campaigns could get and develop in an entire area and tap into a sewage system that's really dysfunctional, broken, antiquated, and always threatened with a breakage. And I watch these things, and it's uneasy to watch because I love the earth. I mean, more than anyone out there. And I believe that actions reminding ourselves that we should have parades celebrating the earth. Great move. But don't be so gullible and take up the mantra and not knowing what you're overlooking and what you become them against them. And you're just sitting there singing the hymn of, oh, save the earth, save the earth. But you won't tell Kirk Caldwell, you know, you're not doing much of anything but polluting. So when your sewage treatment plants spill thousands of gallons or millions of gallons, that is methane and other substances that find its way to the water, the sulfur, the sulfides, hydrogen sulfide, and all of that. Where does that go? Does that go into the air? But we would never get that, you see, in this kind of climate, because it's the Republicans, man, who don't get the idea and won't accept the fact that there is carbon killing off the environment and the atmosphere, you know. But they won't man up or woman up or whatever it is that is needed to stand up and tell your friend that sometimes your friends can be just as foul and polluting as your enemy, as you politically. So it's disheartening when you see that the management of trash, the management of the landfill, you don't see the liberal skydiver screaming to Kirk Caldwell, hey, look, Kirk, you know, we want to be fair about this, man. You're not holding your end up of the bargain. You know that Kapaa Quarry landfill that the city once owned? And, you know, Kirk, we chase these Republicans and we really slam them and, oh, sometimes belligerent. We just call them names. You understand? And then the choir of the environmental group says, amen. You see, it's one big chorus. But none of them are really manning up or womaning up to speak to the specifics. So back to Kurt. Well, Kurt, you know, talking about greenhouse gases, carbon and all of that, you know, Kurt, I have a concern that when you had your landfill at Kapaa Quarry, the city did, and you closed it. And then in turn, you opened a new one. And, hey, you know, Kirk, Mufi, Democrat lovers, you allowed that crap to just breathe and methane to just go into the air and all the VOCs and all the polyurethanes and polyvinyl chloride gases and that and all this mixed trash that gives off this as it breaks down. And so then you close that one in Kapaa. And when you close it, Kirk, you know, because the carbon factor in killing off the environment is really terrible. That's what the Republicans want to accept. But Kirk, we're not going to say one word to you that say that because landfills breathe toxic fumes as the materials degrade, not one environmental group or anybody will speak up and say, let's be fair about this. We want to save the earth. We want to save the environment. We don't want acidification of water. We don't want acid rain. But damn it, you got to do something about your behavior, Kirk, Mufi. I know we're Democrats and, you know, and all of that, and we're brothers in the glove and, you know, and in the hood, Hanabada brothers or whatever it is. But you won't get that kind of conversation. And so, therefore, dotting the islands and throughout the state, you'll find more than some 800 sites, more. And I would encourage you to go to the Department of Health website and type in and look for sites of interest under that section. Just go to Department of Health, Hawaii.gov, and go to Department of Health. And you'll be shocked, and many of these sites will tell you, even if they spill 2 quarts of mineral oil. But my point is, so then what happens is that, and it must be said, guys, so if you back the rail, then you're full of yourselves, and if you're not true to the real democratic process, you're not true to anything but corruption. That's where you owe your existence to, corruption. If you continue to accept any portion of this mantra, this conversation about what the Republicans are not doing, because these guys run afoul of the law in a serious way. So let's go back to Kapaa. So, you know, when you don't know, it's one thing. But when you have a cadre of people, an army of people as consultants and scientists and employees that are specialized in these things and managing the landfills, and so you know what the law says. When you shut down a landfill, you must manage its leachate. That's for some of you that don't know what leachate is. It is a liquid, could be water, and once water comes into contact with trash, municipal solid waste, generally it is defined as leachate. So, think of coffee. You pour water in a coffee pot and the water boils and percolates down and drains the good flavors of the coffee into your cup. Well, they were required to manage leachate at Kapaa, and they were required to put a system in, a piping system, to manage the gases that were being given off, the ozone depleters. And we've talked about this on this show. And no one has turned around and said to the Caldwells, the Carlisles, the Hannemans, but I guess the reason they wouldn't tell them that because there's an exemption. If you're a Democrat, you can exempt yourself from reality sometimes, and especially in this climate. And then you can point the finger and you can have celebrations and you can march and you can rah, 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 ha, ha, ha. But the reality is you're not good to your word. You're loving the earth, but you're loving her in a strange way. you'll tolerate some abuse of her if it's your friends. But if it's someone else doing it, it's a horrendous thing, and it's the end of the world. Kind of strange. So you take that, and then you take the situation where there's a marsh sitting right next door to the Kapaa quarry, where I then find that that same landfill is collecting its leachate when it's supposed to have been transporting it to the sewer treatment plant dump site. Instead, they had rigged an apparatus where they could squeeze the pipe tight, not allow the flow, then at nighttime open the pipe up and let it flow into the marsh, Hale Marsh, the marsh that they were struggling to get. And marshes are important to the environment and to the ecosystem. These weeds and what have you there, the aquatic hydrophytes or hydrophytic plants, serve a great purpose in cleaning the water and what have you. But it served no purpose if you are taking this leachate, this contaminated material, and then dumping it into a channel and knowingly letting it run into the marsh and into the ocean. These aren't Republicans doing this now. So we take that, for example. And, you know, I just sometimes it pains me. And, you know, I'm not a man of violence, will never resort to violence, but damn it, I do hit the table with my fists. Because you take, for example, they're a hard time. And I think that Donald Trump is a mean-spirited person, and I think that all of those things, but this has nothing to do with this. This is about truth. You notice how the environmentalist, the Democratic liberal, he goes out and he talks about, oh, coal, you know, antiquated. This Donald Trump wants to do coal, and it's such an antiquated, and his coal don't bring jobs, other things. But right here we have a plant that burns coal, AES, tires. The city and county of Honolulu burns more than some 60,000, 75,000 tires a year. More than that, actually. Tires. Filters. But I guess because it doesn't have a big R on the smokestack, and the Democrats put it together under their watch, so it's exempt. We love the earth. You're right. Isn't that funny? We love the earth. So, I'm not preaching to you. I'm just basically saying to you, wake up and be fair about this. If you care about the earth, then you have to search your heart and your soul and say, I must speak the truth. No longer can I participate in these cover-ups, smiling when we don't need to smile, speaking the truth and not being partisan, speaking the truth. And when you see a rail being erected and you can only have conversation, if you Kellyanne, the president's spokesperson, I hear people make fun of her. You know, you ask her a question and she never answers it. She puts it back on you. Well, maybe that's what we should do as Democrats here. We should put the answer back on when we're asked, what the hell about that coal burning? What about Kapaa Quarry? What about the landfill at Waimanala Gulch? What about all of these things? What about the sewage spills? Why don't we answer in the affirmative? It's just, the reason is, we love the earth kind of, sort of, but we love our party more. And so when you see this, some people are overjoyed with it, but when I see it, I believe, I get the sensation that I'm standing next to a cesspool when I see these gatherings, because they're well-intended, but the intention and the unwillingness to speak out. Because if you love the earth, folks, there's no, she don't take second seat to nobody. Your honesty and your spirit of being direct and firm. You put your life on the line. You do everything, and you try to educate people, not in a partisan way, but in a way that we all benefit. And we all benefit, and when we think about ourselves, we don't think about ourselves mainly. We think about future generations. So we've had Happy Earth Day, great. But we have so many problems here, ladies and gentlemen, that I can't begin to tell you. From the military with its oils and with its chemicals and all of that being dumped here, spilled here, all of that. And then we look at Virginia and say, well, you know, hey, those guys, they're so antiquated. They are spilling that material in the. And then I go in and show coal dust, coal ash, freely introduced into the environment. And what do I get? Oh, Mr. Cox, can you sign this and tell us what day you took these pictures? And because we're going to go over there and we're going to pursue this, but we're just going to pursue this portion where the dust, where the extractor is digging up the dust, the coal ash, and it's flying off the base. So I'm saying, well, what about the inches of coal dust that is in the properties, in the businesses that have migrated? Oh, no, we don't want to put that in there. Really? Then you're not accepting my complaint. You see, there's a sickness here in the state government, and it's about partisan politics. Though the Democrats in power, I believe they have a sickness, and the only cure for it is to stand up, folks, and vote against them. They don't understand penicillin, they don't understand radiation, they don't understand nothing. They understand the nature of that vote, though. Trust me. It's the most potent inoculation that you can bring forth. And please, if you're going to rail on the Republicans for not caring about the air and the killing of the environment and the pollutant, then you must turn to that little blonde-haired devil there that calls himself the mayor, that shows up only when things look good. But have you ever seen him come out and speak specifically about sewage spills? You ever seen him speak specifically about anything? And then you bring, you know, Obama had 8 years. And even too, he was influenced by this mental illness called I Love the Earth Syndrome. When you're really not loving the earth, you're loving your party. And for example, you know that Kapaa Quarry landfill that I told you about? Well, the liberal-leaning control EPA prior to BT, before Trump, says, well, you know you violated the law up there in Kapaa Quarry, and you didn't put a gas collection system. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to fine you, but you go out and build a solar voltaic building, and then you generate electricity for 3 months or 3 years, and that'll be your penalty. So, like you, folks, I love the earth. I love being a Democrat sometimes, but it sickens me when we lie to ourselves and then spend our time chastising the other and criticizing others, but we won't tell our friends the honest truth. So anyway, I apologize for the difficulties in this mechanics here, but we'll talk again next week. CarolCox.com. We'll see you next week. Aloha.